You're listening to the Music Manumit podcast for April 10th, 2011. Learn more at musicmanumit.com.
Hi, and welcome to another Music Manumit. I'm Tom, and as always, with me is Doug.
Hello, citizens of the universe.
Ooh, that was better. I like that. So how are you doing today?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Made it through Don't Believe Anything on You Read on the Internet Day. So that's always a good thing.
Oh, you're talking about April 1st?
Yeah.
No, there was a couple of them that got me. I can't think of one off the top of my head that got me. But for the most part, it was just like, okay. And then one where it was just like, oh, that one surprised me. And that story doesn't work at all because I can't remember what it was that got me.
Well, they try to do this thing at work where they announce these like fake customers,
yeah,
which could have been interesting. And what they announcing customers at work is a big deal because, you know, we only have like 225 or something, and each contract is worth, you know, millions of dollars. So
I know it's weird, isn't it?
Yeah. So each customer is very, you know, they're very special, and not in a sort of like PR, every customer is special sort of way. They really are, because they are paying us a ton of money.
Right.
So they do this thing where they, you know, they have the intercom system and they play it over the intercom system. And so they did that, and they just royally messed it up the first time. Like, I don't know, it wasn't like a new person was using the intercom or something system or something, I don't think, but
right.
Then they announced that our new customer was the Bronx Zoo. Which, if you know anything about our company, you might know why that's funny, because we don't do veterinary software.
Okay.
But
I gotta say, now that I know that, it still doesn't sound funny. But continue.
Well, it really wasn't that funny.
Okay.
But why that the, you know, the people, why some people might find it humorous that instead of people, they would be dealing with animals, you know,
yeah,
for anthropism. But anyway, then they announced a real customer right after it, and we were like, so is this, you know, we're like listening to this second quote-unquote April Fool's Day customer, and then it's a real customer, and we're like, what? We're like, that has got to be the biggest April Fool's Day fail ever, because you've like prepped everybody for it to be an April Fool's Day joke, and then you've announced a real customer. And it wasn't even a good April Fool's Day joke. Like, it was just horribly mangled.
Right.
You know, and I guess, I don't know, couldn't they have just waited until Monday to announce the customer? I mean, seriously? And then they announced another one later in the day, and they horribly mangled that, trying to make it an April Fool's Day joke as well. Like, comedy, it's like, stick to sales, leave the jokes to the professionals. I mean, I don't know. It was pretty bad.
I thought the Google Motion one wasn't that good either. I don't know. All around, I didn't see anything that was too impressive.
No, the Google Motion one, I think that could be interesting, actually.
you mean the for real, if it were real?
Yeah, I mean, especially for people that, like, know sign language.
Yeah.
You know, if you knew sign language, that would be, like, so awesome. So.
Well, maybe not in the manner of which they were using it, but yeah.
Well,
getting something that actually could read sign language is what you're saying.
Yeah, no.
I find it hard to believe there isn't something out there that is like that.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Words are hard, Tom.
They are. They fail me a lot.
Yeah, I mean, you know, think about how expensive things like the DragonSpeak software is.
Yeah.
You know, and how hard, like, you know, text to speech and speech to text and all that, how like horribly wrong that stuff is. Like do you use Google Voice?
Yeah, I do.
So, you know, you can get the transcriptions of your voicemail.
Right.
Those things are terrible.
Yeah, they are. But that's also because those don't have, like, I've used ones that are good and ones that aren't. And the ones that are good is because what they do is they run it by a translator after the computer has done it. Whereas I think the Google Translate one just goes straight up, like, each one of these is making our system better, but we don't, you know, that's why they ask you to rate them when they send it to you, I think, because it really is just going, okay, the person said that this was a pretty accurate one, so then they're able to go, you know, this stuff worked, these words worked. Whereas other ones like Dial to Do is a service I used to use a lot, which now you have to pay for it and it's really expensive. It's not that expensive. But anyway, and theirs was
more expensive than free.
Exactly. That's pretty much what I meant. And theirs was really good. There were some times when I would use theirs and I'd get the translation back or the transcript back, and it was like almost spot on. Like even with really bad recording or, you know, something like an idea that I had at like 2 o'clock at night walking home from the bar, you know, so I had my swerve on. And it was still able to translate it pretty good. And I think it has a lot to do with the third party stuff. And also because what it would do is instead of just going, okay, I'm going to make up what it is, it would, the stuff that it wasn't too sure about, it would write it and then put a little question mark in parentheses next to it to go, is that right? Or this one might be wrong or whatever. Whereas Google, the translator on Google Voice just flat out writes whatever it feels like.
You know, well, and, I mean, although, it does tell you it's like a gray or black. If it doesn't know.
That's true. That's true. Like it goes, we know this is the word, this has been confirmed or whatever, or we know, I don't know. It's all I know is that the undertaking of something like that is like super huge. And I think they're just doing it kind of like with those CAPTCHA things where they use online libraries and, you know, scanned books. They use you to help them translate what the words are to confirm that that's the word it's supposed to be, you know, that sort of stuff. Anyway,
I think, I had a quality one a while back that it was something somebody was calling from the Demons Clinic to fix my plumbing or
the
something like that.
Demons Clinic?
Yeah. It was Dean. Oh. But it was, I mean.
Oh,
but,
to fix your plumbing?
Yeah. The reading the transcription was just fantastic. I mean, it was just so, I mean, you could see where they got, you know, the, you know, where they were coming from,
right?
You know, stuff, but it was just the sentences were hilarious when combined.
Well, one more thing that's interesting too, in the same sort of manner, when I was talking about the CAPTCHA things, when you get the reCAPTCHA ones, if you ever see those, they have a thing that goes, you know, listen to the CAPTCHA.
Yeah, yeah.
It'll say it to you. Have you ever clicked on one of those?
No, I don't believe I have.
Do it sometime. They're not at all what it says. And it's always some, I've had a couple where I had to download it because I was like, what is this? Like, it's some weird sound clip of like, no, it's like somebody talking, but it's like, if they like all of a sudden tapped into someone's phone conversation for like 2 seconds and then tapped out of it. So like one I got was just like, that's what I did, you know, and it's like that. Those weren't the words, and it, I mean, that's just an example. But it was like a dude like making an exclamation of something, like he was telling somebody something, and that was the sample. And it was like the words were something like, you know, so weird. Like,
oh yeah, I mean, I figured it wasn't the printout. It's right. Just totally separate.
But that's what I would have expected, is that it would have been the printout.
Interesting.
Yeah, now, I don't know.
I figure. Yeah, I guess I just figured they were different systems entirely.
But, well, my main thing is that it's not like some robotic, you know, voice. It's it's a sound sample of somebody saying something somewhere. So I don't know if they have you, maybe they have you translating. Oh, you know, I just thought of this. Maybe they're having you help translate voice conversations like
that
for Google Voice. I don't know. But I couldn't see like there being a huge amount of it being translated. Like I just asked you if you had ever clicked on one and you said no.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's hard to say.
What somebody should do is make songs based on these terrible Google Voice transcriptions.
You know, there is on archive.org, there is, and it's not what you said, but a different thing, whereas they have a dictionary, what are they? I forget what they're called. They're called dictionary songs or something like that. So those type in the word dictionaries that will say it in the voice for you. Like there's a guy's voice and a girl's voice, and it's, you know, they're obviously robotic. There's a guy that did songs using those. He would type in the words like he did I Feel Good by James Brown, and he has the woman's voice doing it. So it's like, I feel good. I knew that I would now. You know, it's on archive.org. You should listen to it. They got some interesting stuff there. So look up like dictionary songs or something. And yeah, I thought that was a pretty genius idea. And it's entertaining to boot. Well, speaking of
music. Did you see what I did there, Tom?
What did you do?
I brought it back to music.
And yeah, you did. And that's, I was going, hey, he just brought it back to music. So I was like, speaking of that, what did we want to talk about this week, Doug?
Well, let's see here. Which order? Okay, well, we'll start at the furthest back, which is the one I've got first here in the show notes, the 19th. So how to start? I've played them before. I think they're a German hardcore band. They only have like 4 songs, I think, on Jamendo, something like that. But they're all ridiculously awesome. And at some point, all 4 of them will be on the show, unless I just find other ridiculously awesome stuff.
Now, are you talking about the songs that you picked for that? You're saying
I'm talking about the 16th. The oh man, Google Docs error. Can't go there. Whatever. The one where it has the picture of the girl with the Hot Topic is not punk rock shirt.
That one was not related at all to what was going on. I just thought it was a funny picture.
Yeah, I had some punk on there. So
that's
true.
That's true. It wasn't like there were. I could have chosen like
you had. You had the song "Punk Rock" by P. Lander Z, which that's is right. actually one I was planning on playing.
Oh, really?
Eventually, yeah.
Oh, nice.
So that's kind of interesting. I saw that and I was like, "You beep."
Oh, nice! I like how you translated or censored yourself there.
Yeah, I know. It was even my feelings at the moment were even too extreme for this show. So it was momentary. So
right.
But yeah, and then I had the How to Start song, which is My City. Now that I had the page open, and I also had the Distemper song. So there was, you know, it was a punky show. So I figured I thought it went well. If you hadn't said that, Tom, I would have thought you just, you know, picked it. I would thought it was relevant.
So. Yeah, I think I was just kind of following along in the theme. I'm trying to think of how it's weird going back this far because it's like what, 2 weeks ago? I can't. I can't really remember what I was going for when I did these ones. I didn't prepare before the show to remember what I did on those.
If they weren't life changing, it might not be.
They were not, but I remember it being. There was something on here. I did like P-Lander, though. I know, even though I at first it was just because the name was funny, but I seem to recall being very surprised by them. Oh yes, that's right, because they are. they dress up on stage like some goofy guys on the picture that they have here. There's, I think one of them's dressed as, I don't know, maybe an Eminem. Not really sure. but yeah, no, they were a fun band. I enjoyed that one. Yeah, I don't know. I
What'd
can't remember.
What do you think of the Raziel Jamara song that I had, the Flow Forever / One Time to the Beat?
Yeah, I don't know. I can't remember back that far, and I haven't listened to it recently.
Oh, sweet. So I was looking for this, actually, and I just found – so Flow Forever and One Time to the Beat are actually 2 different songs.
Yeah.
But the one that I had, like, put – or one's like an intro. It's like the intro track and then track 2. But I don't remember who released it. It must just be on the archive.org because that's where I point it to eventually. So there's a Creative Commons compilation 2010 that, who put this together? Who's the curator on this? WFMU put it together. And so, but when they put the compilation, they put the intro with this song. And so that's how I first heard it. And then when I was looking for it, a bunch of places had it where it was, the songs were split. And I was like, well, that's not what I have. But I did end up finding it. So I don't know, that was a little bit different from me, so I thought that I would point that one out. I had 2 pretty mainstream rock songs on that show, the Kavanaugh song and the Tin Penny Joke. They were both, you know, hardcore radio, you know, type
and
songs.
We've played the first one before, the Kavanaugh.
Yeah, we played that Far From Chicago. That was that's the title track from the one that I got this one off of, I think. They've got some other albums, but I think that's, it's from Far From Chicago. I think that's the only one I've bothered to download, though.
And this was all part of the, our theme that everything was actually just completely attribution, either attribution or attribution share alike.
Right, right. Or I think you played at least one of the weeks of Public Domain song. Actually, the next week, the 25th, you played I'm the Last of the Red Hot Mamas by Sophie Tucker.
Yep, which was public domain. This was really, actually, it was totally by chance that this happened because I had just, okay, so at work, I got a copy of a show from a radio show from the 80s, which was called the Cape Cod Mystery Theater. And it was a, you know, just a thing where they put on like murder mysteries and junk like that. And I'm sorry, wrong show. let me go back. On archive.org, I listened to this after that. On archive.org, they have episodes of a experimental radio series from the 1960s, I believe, that was called the CBS Workshop. Not to be confused with the radio, CBS Radio Mystery Theater. CBS Workshop, and it's on archive.org, and one of them I was listening
not
to...
Not to be confused with Factory.
Yes. And one of the shows that I was listening to that week was one, I don't know the title of it, but it was basically the life story of Sophie Tucker. And and it was really interesting. It was about how she started out, and basically the whole thing was just that she had a great voice, but they made her do a minstrel show, you know, where you wore the blackface, because basically her manager said, "You're too ugly to be a singer, but you have a great voice, so we're basically going to cover your face. Make you go out there because you're so ugly." And I mean, this was all a true story about her telling it and stuff. And it was just basically a story of her relating her life to everyone. And it was super interesting. And I was like, wow, that's really cool. And then when I was doing the searching for this show, I was typing in just stuff looking for it under that and or under a public domain or, you know, the attribution license. And I'm the Last of the Red Hot Mamas showed up, and I was like, well, hot damn, I was just listening to Sophie Tucker today or about her. So I put it in, and that was one of her famous songs that she had done. So that was the little story behind that, how it kind of related
indeed
to my week. That's all I had to say about it. So continue with what you were saying.
Oh, no, that's a good story.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was moving us on to that week, and so did you have anything else to say about that week?
No, that was just I was happy that I finally did get. I saw in the notes you actually had put and maybe public domain, and there I found one.
Yeah. So
so I beat you because you didn't have one.
No. Well, you know, I've always been sort of. I think I may have had a public domain song at one point, but
you didn't.
I've always been sort of like iffy as to whether I wanted to have public domain songs or not. Just because I think it confuses the issue with CC0. And I mean, I think it's in the end is fine, but we sort of say we're Creative Commons remixable music, which public domain stuff is not Creative Commons.
But it is remixable.
It is. So it's kind of, yeah, I'm sort of not, I don't know how to put it. It's one of those things where I guess I'm just torn between the two, you know, sort of not caring and also sort of wanting to not have scope creep. Those are my two sort of things.
Scope creep. That sounds like some sort of mouthwash villain.
Well, I'm surely you've heard that term being a web developer. Surely scope creep is not it.
I think I've heard it maybe once or twice, but it's not something I hear a lot. I'm a front-end developer, so I don't hear a lot of that. I just get cross-browser a lot.
Yeah. So I had Dan Lynch over at Rat Hole Radio. I played one of his band songs, El Bulino, which I heard the acoustic version of that the first time that I heard the song at all, and I was not impressed at all. But
you didn't
this
like
version,
the acoustic one?
No.
Okay.
But this one's, you know, this one's kind of rocking. So I put it in there.
It is tough to make that transition from acoustic, or rock into acoustic.
Sometimes it works, but yeah.
Well, I grew up in the 90s, so I'm kind of done with that whole thing. Like they had the unplugged thing and
right.
I'm just sick of it. I mean, not anything against people that do it, but I personally, I'm like, I'd rather hear the real song.
Yeah.
And that's neither here nor there with the fact that Dan did it. I'm just saying that's just me. I had to live through the actual show MTV Unplugged.
Yeah.
So, case said. All right. Oh. All right. Let's see. Moving on to the next week.
Well, I was going to ask, do you remember the Coffee and Q song that I listed as pop punk on that week?
No. Let me pull this up again. I closed the page.
It's like 7 minutes long, and it has this like piano intro. I wasn't exactly sure what to call it. It's definitely not pop punk.
No, and it is another one of those ones where it's kind of like all of a sudden it's another song. It's like, why did you do them as one? I know you like that, but I always get confused. Like, even I was in the grocery store yesterday, and Band on the Run came on, and you know, by Wings, I believe. And it's like, it's two songs. Why, and then it never talks back to the other one. So why did this happen? Doing it this way?
The entire first part of that one, though, is, I mean, it's instrumental. So in that sense, and I think it does build on the theme. I mean, he's sort of like
I was basically saying Band on the Run does that. And that's, I'm sorry. I could see how that would be confusing.
I know what you're talking about. But this one has a very much crescendo. Like at the beginning, he's totally like, chill, smoking weed or something. And at the end, he's on like meth, totally flipping out. But it's like the same song structure, it's just him screaming instead of like being soothing.
Yeah.
And it was definitely all over the place, almost doesn't even cover it because it was linear. There was a start and there was a finish and there was a trajectory upon that path. It wasn't it didn't look like a seismograph.
Right.
But it definitely, there was a broad spectrum of what was covered in that song. So, the only other thing on that week is, as I like to do, I like to sort of make my songs fit together interestingly. And I have, It's What I Do right before the song Fake It. So, you had a verb after What I Do. I don't know. I kind of like that. But I don't think anybody besides me cares. Mostly because people don't read show notes. But if they
did, least they're subscribing, Doug. That's the important thing.
That's true. the next week, moving on to not April Fool's Day, April 2nd.
Right.
First track was Isaac Graham, who... an interview with him will be released before you hear this, but has not been released as I say it.
Right.
Yeah. I never know what to say about those besides just explaining the continuum there.
Yes. The editing needs to happen before the show is put up.
This will be the past.
Yes.
But right now it's in the future.
I think we likened it to the Back to the Future movies once before.
Yeah, it definitely is like that. This Jack Riot song, the second one from this week, I've had that in my queue forever. I have no idea why I haven't played it. Because it's awesome.
Right.
And then I stole Sonora Rant, or whatever, how you pronounce that.
Sonora Rant?
Stole that from... Well, it wasn't that track, but I stole that band from Craig's recent... instrumental metal show.
Oh yeah, and you guys were having a conversation about that stuff online.
So I took a look at all those bands, and this was not the song, or it's not actually a song because it's instrumental. This was not the piece that that he played, but it is from one of those bands. So I want to give him credit for that. And then the next one is in French and is just completely badass. With the accordion.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, if you're somebody that doesn't like to listen to our, our music shows for whatever reasons, this one band is one you got to just check out just to see how they mesh the accordion and hip hop, and it doesn't seem forced. You could see some bands sort of just doing it to just to be different or something. But to me, it just seems like something they're really comfortable with, which makes sense, given the fringe.
Right.
But I don't know. If you listen to the album, there's a lot of that sort of stuff. But this one, I think, is... first of all, this was the first song I heard off the album. And I just heard it listening to, the Jamendo hip-hop station. And it just came up. And I was like, this is amazing. And I downloaded the album. And the rest of the stuff's good, too. But I don't know that if for me, anything else quite hits the high of that song.
Yeah.
And then Arrogant Sons of Bitches is the first song that I have put on here off the quote unquote records.
I like their song titles on their site went to go. Like the whole thing, like Arrogant Sons of Bitches, they really follow that theme as far as the naming conventions of their songs and everything. I liked that. I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah, yeah. So there'll definitely be some more of them on the show later, and probably some other stuff from quote unquote. I downloaded some of the other bands off of there, but haven't gotten around to listen to all of it. But Arrogant Sons of Bitches is actually one that, or I believe they're referred to as ASOB often, presumably, so that people don't get into trouble for saying their name. We could just, there's like Fortunate Son. We could call him like Arrogant Son.
Hmm.
I don't know. Or ASOB.
Oh, I like that.
ASOB. Yeah,
we'll ASOB. ASOB. It sounds like ASOP.
It does. I was thinking that. I knew them before I knew that they were Creative Commons, which is really cool feeling. I don't know if you've ever, you know, listened to a band, you know, come up on Last.fm or whatever, and then you find out they released stuff under Creative Commons. And it's different than like Nine Inch Nails, because, you know, when Nine Inch Nails releases under Creative Commons, everybody's like, oh my God, Nine Inch Nails, Creative Commons. But this is just, you know, like a indie punk band that I, you know, happen to know because I listen to punk music, and then sure enough, they release under Creative Commons. That ever happened?
Yeah. So when did they do that? Just recently, or
everything on quote unquote is Creative Commons, and I didn't know they were on quote unquote, and I couldn't have told you that until we talked to Joe. But you know, some of those they're just punk bands, you know, and that's the thing about quote unquote that I think is really interesting, and one of the reasons that I guess it's worth talking about them some is because and I need to, I guess, hit up their MySpace or their Twitter or something, because I emailed them and they say on their website not to email them, or they say you can, but they're probably not going to respond. And I was like, MySpace, I'll just email them and see what happens.
Why would you have an email if nobody's going to answer it? I don't understand. Well, that doesn't make any sense.
They said they use their email for PayPal. So I don't know exactly, you know, if it's just because you have to have an email for a PayPal account or what. But that's what it says on the website, that it's mostly for PayPal.
Hmm.
But anyway, you know, they're coming at it from the perspective of a label. You know, we are a punk rock label. That's it. It just so happens that we release under Creative Commons. You know, they're not a quote unquote net label. I mean, that's not how they see themselves. I mean, their bands tour, their bands are on that label. You know, it's not like we like this band. Hey, you won't mind if we put your album up on our website? I mean, I'm saying that kind of like, you know, pejoratively a little bit, but I'm just, not because I don't think that's a good thing to do, but I think sort of calling it a label is sort of disingenuous.
Right.
But I guess it's cool that kind of we have a separate name. You know, a net label is different than a label, which
right,
I think
for first time hearers, first time people that have you know never known what they were before, that's what they're going to assume is that it is a label on the internet, which it kind of is, but it depends on how they follow through on it. Like Copy Left is more so an internet label than or not internet label. There you go. I just want to make sure I was using the right word than like Headphonica would be, as far as Headphonica promotes the bands, but they don't. No. Actually, did he say that? No, that was Bad Panda. He helps them set up tours and events and stuff like that. Right. So that sort of thing I feel is more net label-ish rather than, internet label-ish than net label-ish. I think there should be a differentiation between the two, like net label. Just because it is so slightly different. That's why I think net label and internet label should be really put into the two different categories.
I think the thing with quote unquote that's different is that the guy, I don't remember the guy's name who started out, but you know, he came from the world of like punk rock and like being screwed over by labels and all of, you know, like that, you know, he came from the scene, quote unquote. I'm doing the air quotes thing.
I kind of caught that.
But and whereas, you know, guys like Joe are sort of, they're coming at it from the internet, you know, like this is the way things work on the internet. So if you come at it from there, you sort of have a, you know, you don't have this baggage. And again, I'm using sort of a negative term. I don't necessarily mean for it to be negative. You could call it experience as much as it is baggage. But, you know, they don't have this real world experience of sort of the, you know, plastic and paper label, whereas the guys from quote unquote do. And so all the things that like a normal label does in the way that they sort of position themselves as like, you know, not so much bands that we like, but bands that are going to be good tourers, bands that are, you know, going to sell, bands that aren't going to, you know, get, you know, quit in the middle of their tour and we've got all these dates booked and making us look like assholes. You know, like that's how they're sort of setting things up, as opposed to, okay, we're on the internet, we're putting stuff on the internet, great, we're done. You know, we'll help you promote it as well, but not sort of a what you do reflects on us because we're your label sort of thing.
Yeah.
Am I making any sense?
No, I get what you're saying.
Okay, good. Because I kind of felt like maybe I was just sort of ranting there for a second.
Yeah, not that
you
still
can't make sense when you rant. Yeah, so.
Right.
Anyway, we had a lot of sons getting back to our show because you had the Sons of the Pioneers. So I'm guessing you could be the son, an arrogant son of a bitch pioneer.
That's true.
So that would be like a punk ska folk band if all of those guys got together, right?
Right.
So,
if you say so.
I'm trying to make, I bring people together, Tom. That's what I do. And anyway.
Well, and speaking of you know, like the conversation you were having just a minute ago about people promoting stuff and all that kind of thing. The first track that I have is actually from, I saw it posted on the Creative or CC Music group on Identica. Uh-huh. And there's apparently an event by KVR. Audio, which I believe is considered a net label. I don't know. I went to their site and it wasn't quite sure. I didn't quite get what it was from it, but what I did get was that they are holding an event called Only One Synthesizer. And they're showing how people could, or they're having a contest of people writing songs with just a synthesizer. That's it. I don't know if multi-layering is involved or, you know, but because some of the songs, and even the one I played, sounds like more than one thing is going on, or one tone is going on, but it might just be like, okay, you can only use this one thing, no band, whatever. I don't know. But they have a section there where they arrange it by different software or emulators or whatever that you use to create it. And one of the sections is for Zin and Ad, I believe it's called. Hold on, let me open up my menu here just so I don't get it wrong. But it's a free. I don't know if it's only Linux based, but it's a keyboard emulator, and it's called Zin Ad Sub FX software synthesizer. And I've actually got it running on mine, and I have a cheap little like $70 MIDI keyboard that I bought from Target that I use to use it. So like I plug that in. And then all of a sudden I can use that software and like change the sounds and create, you know, you can go from organ sounds or piano sounds, guitar sounds. They have noise sound, you know, just like you got a whole library of different effects you can use. And this particular song was in that category, which I chose because I found it odd. And I talked with him online a little bit, the guy that posted it. But I was just like, you know, what are the licenses on this? And he's like, oh, some of them are, you know, They're all rights protected unless they chose otherwise. And I'm kind of thinking, well, why is it in the CC group? But still, there were a couple that were on there, and it's over on SoundCloud and stuff. And I believe I linked to it because the guy that did it just only has a SoundCloud account, and he puts a bunch of stuff up there.
Are you talking about the Mucinex guy?
Yeah,
or
Mucinex. That's funny. It sounds like Mucinex.
Yeah, it does.
I haven't said it out loud.
He's French, so I wonder if he knows that.
I don't know. But what was also confusing, too, is at first the song is hyphenated, so I thought at first that the song was called Zluis, which I think I'm not pronouncing correctly, And then
how I'd pronounce it.
Yeah, and then it's dash tension, which must be,
or it could be Louis because he's French.
True, but I thought Tension was the name of the band, and then after further investigation, maybe. It's maybe. Oh my God,
I'm sorry,
but so that's why I posted that there, and there are a couple of CC songs on there, but all in all, it's an interesting event, and I like it when people do this kind of stuff.
This guy, the, you know, we are not sponsored by Musinex guy. He all of his stuff is the non-commercial share alike.
Right.
So that's cool. Yeah. So yeah, this KVR 1 cent challenge. It looks like there's two of them that are Creative Commons.
Yeah, I think that's all. But that's it. But that once again is in the Zin Ed sub FX category. So if you go to the website, you'll see a bunch of other subcategories, and I didn't check in those ones.
this just says KVR 1 cent challenge on
right.
The way I used.
Yeah, you'd have to go to their actual website. I don't remember what their website is, but they have a sidebar with there's only the
14 on SoundCloud, but you're saying there's a bunch more tracks somewhere.
Oh, maybe that's it. Maybe no, that wouldn't make sense, because when you click on it, it'll take you to the song. I don't know. Maybe those are all the songs and they're arranged on the website.
And where is the KVR website? Because I went to their like, because they're the moderator.
Right.
And then I clicked on them, KVR OSC2, and I don't see like a website or anything there.
No, I went to it, but I didn't link to their actual website. Because if you go to KVR Audio, you get their store. You don't get their blog or whatever. And it's the contest itself is somewhere else.
Okay. Well, that's a great story, Tom.
Isn't it?
Yeah, I just started following them, but they haven't uploaded any stuff, the KVR guys, so... probably not going to be
That's the other thing too, is they have a lot of, like, I don't know, like if they're mistake accounts or accounts they lost the password for, but if you actually search for it, there's like five different KVR audio users on SoundCloud, and then one of them is the right one, and then they all have the same logo and everything, so I'm thinking like they were testing it out and they didn't, or they, you know, started their account a long time ago and forgot about it, which I've done that before. So
I've only done that, I want to say like once or something.
I've just learned from now on, or I sign up for so many things. I've just learned to check first with my email address to see if it's email or, you know, my usual username before I sign up to start an account to see if I'm actually already there. And I got to tell you, like 8 times out of 10, I usually have already set up an account there. So that's always a interesting thing.
Sweet.
Mm-hmm.
So my next thing here on the show notes was just totally random. Wendy and I were talking about the double bass before the show. I don't know why. I don't remember. Yeah, she was talking about how she played viola when she was a kid. And
you're talking like actual double bass, not like two neck bass like in Spinal Tap. You're talking bass that has a bow and can be plucked.
Yes.
Okay.
Or kicked, or many things can be done to such a bass if you would like to do them. They're expensive, which is why what we were talking about. Because I was like, should have been a cellist, because she thinks viola players are, you know, the redheaded stepchilds. I have nothing against redheaded stepchilds. It's just a saying. And I was like, well, he should have been a cellist. And then she was like, and then someone said they were expensive, and I was like, well, not as expensive as a double bass. And she was like, what the hell are you talking about, a double bass? I was like, you know, like the kind of bass that you stand up and play. She didn't know they were called double basses.
Yeah, I didn't know for a while either, and I did think whenever I saw those that people were saying the double bass, like, you know, a rock band would have the double neck.
So speaking of rock bands, there's a little popular music section on there, on the double bass article on Wikipedia. And I just thought this was amazing, this little section. It has absolutely nothing to do with Creative Commons. But it's awesome. It says, Peter Steele, bassist / vocalist for the gothic metal band Type O Negative, was renowned for occasionally playing an upright bass held like a guitar.
His feet would make
I would just imagine that the thing would be heavy.
No, that was the whole thing, though, because he was a meat of a guy. And, I mean, he was
even
huge.
If you're 6'8 and scrawny, I would have thought that it would be hard to lift a double bass.
Yeah, I never got why they did that. I remember that now. I was actually working at a nightclub when they became popular. And I remember when they came into town and, like, some of the people came back and they thought it was so cool. And for some reason, it makes them, it makes people think that they're, like, really musical. Like, oh, and he did this amazing thing where, like, he used the double bass the way no one would. And it's like, no, he picked it up because he's a giant guy and was showing off. There's no reason for him to do it. And I just
people are impressed by Malmsteen doing stuff like that too.
Yeah,
I mean, not
but he actually has the skills. Like,
yeah,
you know, he actually has classical training and background, and he doesn't talk like this, which is the Type O Negative singer, which drives me nuts. I can't listen to them for very long. He reminds me of Danzig, but I would rather listen to Danzig than Type O Negative. You know,
it looks like he was on the cover of Playgirl once.
Really?
Yeah.
That I didn't know. And I'm kind of sorry, I do know now.
Well, I'm just trying to find a picture of this. So I type in Type O Negative and I go to, I guess, I'm not even sure how you pronounce this, but Bilder. It's images in Swedish. Because that's what my Google was in at the moment.
Oh, you're doing that again, huh?
Well, you know, it's just on this computer.
Okay.
And I don't notice it except on some sites because I just have my browser set to go to the Swedish page if there's a Swedish page available. And a lot of times there's not.
I feel like you should be finding more dirty pages doing that. When you say the Swedish page, it just for some reason makes it sound like it's supposed to be naughty.
Well,
I don't know why.
I think you get the same Playgirl cover picture if you were on the English site.
I see. The only thing I can think of is I remember, this reminds me of that for some reason, but I remember when the singer for Rat decided to be in Playgirl, and I just remember thinking, really? He's gross, you know? I don't know. I never understood what, I mean, not many girls saw, first of all, his band was named Rat, which is gross already, and then the singer,
It's spelled
really,
with two T's, though, Tom.
That's true, and they were back to back. They were like upside down L's. And second, he was just, I always thought he was kind of a gross looking guy. So when he was in Playgirl, it was like, that just seems really yucky. I mean, in the sense too, that I didn't really want to see him naked, but I just felt like, you know, I could see if like a good looking guy poses, I'm like, okay, I could see that being popular. Whereas, hey, the singer for Rat's naked. Ew.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm totally not. Maybe I need to put bass in this image search.
You're searching without bass?
Well, I just put Type O Negative. I figured
how
it'd
low
be awesome.
Can you go, Doug?
I figured it would be awesome enough that it would be there, but it wasn't. So
you're gonna make me
clearly
search for it before you.
The internet does not think it is awesome as I think it is. Or maybe it's not true.
No,
maybe
it's
you're
true.
Lying. No. And so is Wikipedia. Well, Google doesn't have it. Oh, here he is. Here's a picture.
Yeah, I've seen it.
He's got a little guitar on. What? No, this is stupid looking.
What's
this? I'm gonna send you this, Tom, because I don't know what's going on with this. But it showed up. This is definitely not the Type O Negative guy, but it looks bizarre.
He kind of looks like Tom Wisow.
I don't know who that is.
Oh, okay. You're not familiar with the internet sensation / movie The Room. I love it when you do that because you sound like Butthead. Okay, you're
Mom Beavis.
Well, then never mind. Explaining it to you won't make you know what it is anymore. So
it might.
I don't know. No. They did a marathon of it on, or they played the movie the other night on Adult Swim, and it was awesome. It's a great movie. Like, the guy doesn't speak really good English, so he overdubs all of his voices, but he overdubs them himself, so it doesn't really make much of a difference afterwards. And he just will go from one line to the next. Like, one of the major scenes is where he was accused of hitting his ex-girlfriend, and he walks out into or walks onto the roof of the building, and he throws his drink to the ground, and he goes, "I did not hit her. I did not hit her. Oh, hi, Tom." And he turns and says hi to the guy that's on the roof, like just out of nowhere. Like he just threw something to the ground. Then he's like, "Oh, hi, Tom." It's just a really bizarre movie. Anyway, okay, so typo negative, Tommy Wiseau.
If I don't see a picture of this, it's going to keep
I know,
me
I'm
up
really kind of surprised that it's not up here. Oh, I do remember this, and this is what I was thinking when you first brought the story up. The guy is dead. He died last year. I remember hearing about that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. But I don't recall. I remember it was he either overdosed or killed himself or something like that.
Maybe a giant
base fell on him. Come on, respect for the dead, Doug.
I mean, you know.
You're an awful person. oh, and I just found a picture of Beavis and Butthead. That's funny. Yeah.
All right. Okay, I'm going to okay, stop that's... looking for this, and I'm going to pretend you never said that it's happened.
Okay, good. Good. And, yeah. That's 5 minutes.
Let's
just ignore
on.
The last 5 minutes that we did.
I think that was more than 5 minutes, dude.
We'll hope not.
All right. Let's talk about this Last FM thing, and then we can probably get out of here because I got to get up really early tomorrow morning.
Uh-oh.
The ones that are timeless, we can skip those again.
Okay.
Except actually, this is in the timeless category. But
yeah.
So I talked about this once before with you on the show, and a while back, it's been probably a couple of years now, year and a half. I don't know how long it's been. It's been a while. But Pete sort of called me a dirty Creative Commons hippie, playfully, not because he hates Creative Commons or anything. Pete Raster that we had on the show a while back. And I was kind of like, yeah, I think you're probably mistaken about how much Creative Commons music I actually listen to. I mean, this was well before we started the show. And so I put on my blog, I actually listed like the Creative Commons bands that that at the time were on my, you know, my top 500. Do you ever look at that, Tom? Your top 500 artists or your top 500 tracks? Or
no,
like that?
I don't. And it's weird. I don't use Last.fm the way I should. I hook it up to everything I have, but I rarely go to the site and do all the stuff that you can do with it. And I really should start doing that.
Well, I mean, if you don't care, then, you know.
No, I care. I just don't think about it. Like, I mean, I even have my, when I'm listening to, you know, Free Music Archive, I have that plugged into Last.fm too. And I have my Blip FM account, plugged into it. And I don't think you can do Groove Shark on it, but regardless, I'm just saying it wherever I can plug it in, I usually do. And then you do a heck of a lot with yours more than I do, or you know, at least visit a lot more. And I used to be a huge fan of Last.fm, and for some reason I've just kind of not soured on it, but just kind of forgot about it. It's like the girl that you never call back, but you know she's always there waiting for you. Oh, that's sad. All right, we'll continue with your story.
Well, I'm trying to look for this at this post, for this post, while you were going on, and
while I was going on, thanks.
I haven't really been able to find this. But I will find this just for, you know, we can put it in the show notes or whatever. It doesn't really matter.
I do see that you have. Wait, are on here? Do you have Pete's score or is
I found it? I found it. So anyway, the title of the post is Creative Commons FTW, or For the Win. And then I talk about how basically a lot of these bands that I, you know, kind of liked that were Creative Commons, they were pretty low down my list. You know, something like Severed Fifth, John O'Bacon's band, rolled in at 347 back when I did this, which was in... it was in August of 2009, so year and a half ago, like I mentioned. But anyway, so I just went through, you know, I did this once before, but I think what I'm going to do is I need to like make a spreadsheet and just track the progression of some of these bands. But all those numbers that you see on the show notes, Tom, and I should put these up on my blog and we can link to them too, are where they fit on the on my list. So Nine Inch Nails is number 16, which when I did the blog post 2 years ago, or a year and a half ago, they were 76. So they've jumped up since I've started trying to listen to more Creative Commons. Because doing the post sort of got me thinking about the fact that I don't listen to as much Creative Commons as I, you know, I talk about how Creative Commons is awesome, and then I wouldn't really, you know, do much with it. So, but now obviously I am. But anyway, some of the interesting things I noted on here are, I noted some of the bands that are not quote-unquote Creative Commons bands. You know, they have a catalog of non-Creative Commons material. And so Nine Inch Nails is on there, and Diablo Swing Orchestra is on there. Of course, they only have two albums, so they could almost be called Creative Commons bands. The Smashing Pumpkins, New Bomb Turks, Talco, which actually Talco has two albums, so they're another one where maybe they could go either way. Moaning Lemon, Razor Boys, and some of these that are listed as Creative Commons, the only reason they're Creative Commons is because they're, as far as I'm aware, is because their live stuff from the FMA is Creative Commons. So again, that's sort of, you know, where does that fit in there, you know, as far as are they truly Creative Commons, you know, and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But and then the red ones were for me, and of course nobody can see this, but imagine red highlighted names of bands for ones that I expect to be higher. And that's another thing I could mention when I post about these. And then the ones that are in all caps, or not all caps, but are in larger font, are people that we've had on the show, which there's only three of those, which is kind of sad. We should try to make that that number higher.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't go through and count. And actually what I was planning to do was to go back today and see how much things had changed, just to sort of, you know, I just think it's going to be interesting to see how much, like, my listening has actually changed because of doing the show and what bands. Because that's one thing, given that I've been doing Last FM for, or it was Audio Scrabbler when I started, you know, for 6 years now, there's a lot of sort of back data, you know, bands that I don't really listen to as much anymore. Are really high, like, you know, the band that my ex-girlfriend and I listened to all the time, like literally all the time. We never had a song, we had an album. And we tried to like pick a song from that album, but it turns out that every song on the album was like really depressing and we couldn't really pick a song from it because you can't do that. But anyway, that's not important at all. But anyway, the point is that that band just still rolls in at like 17 or something like that. And I haven't listened to them. Like literally not once have I listened to that band in like 2 years. More like 3 years. But I listened to them so much while I was dating her that they were number one and they just haven't dropped past 17. So it's kind of interesting, I think, to go and look at... if you go onto somebody's homepage on Last.fm, you know, they've got the overall, and then they've got the last 12 months, and they've got the last 6 months, and the last 3 months. And you can see that there are some bands that are clearly new to the list, you know, and then there are some bands that are kind of have just really shot up recently. You know, like that, the SOB Para sound.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just really started to listen to them a lot. Like, I don't know how many times I've played them on the show, like three or something. But in the last 3 months, I've played them 211 times personally. But if I go back to, like, the past 6 months, I've only played them... I've only played them 235 times in the past 6 months. So before the past 3 months, you know, before whatever, January... I had only listened to them 24 times. So, like, I found them off of Jamendo, and now they're just, like, I think they're really awesome, and I listen to them all the time. So it's, I don't know. I think it's interesting to track that sort of stuff.
Now, let me ask you a question. How are you determining these statistics? How are you getting them? Are you going through and just figuring it out by, you know, manually, or do you have something you're using to tell you?
No, if you go to the Last.fm site and you, you know, you go to your user page, it'll tell you the top 15 artists right on the page. But if you click on see more down there in the bottom right, so you got the top artists, then it'll tell you the top 500.
Right.
And then you could do the same thing for the last 12 months, the last 6 months.
Right, but you're not doing something that goes, this is a Creative Commons artist. You're just looking at it and going, I know
I'm just looking at it and
that's what
picking.
I was wondering. I didn't know if you had something that would be an interesting plugin to do. I think somebody should
do about that.
Do
it would
an
be
API
really
thing.
Easy to do. I mean, if you just like if you just picked, I mean, it would be hard to do based on like all Creative Commons music, you know, out there, because who knows what all is out there. But if you just picked like Jamendo or FMA?
Not necessarily. They'd have to, well, there is a way to do it because there is a Creative Commons tag that actually is a supported tag on Last.fm. Yeah, there is.
Oh, you mean the people tags?
No, I mean, for real, there's a section where they go, hey, these are a group of, like, it has a header and everything and says, these are Creative Commons artists. Like if you search,
so wait, how do you get to that? Because I've never seen that.
I did a search, and now I just clicked around on it. Hold on. Let me...
because if you're looking at the user tag, then that could be just, like, wrong.
Right.
I mean, there is Creative Commons tag, of course, because you can tag anything.
No, this is an actual section touting, like, the Creative Commons users on Last.fm.
All right.
Yeah, if you go to... it is the tag page. But if you go to last.fm/tag/Creative Commons, there's a whole thing where it's like Creative Commons is a nonprofit organization devoted to explain, you know, and
but they have that for every tag.
They have it saying the definition of it?
Yeah, they say this is what death metal is. This is what.
Oh, see, I told you, I don't go to the, I don't go around in the site anymore. I went to this and I saw the tag, and I mean, they have like.
No, this is just a user generated. Like, I could go to Gene Simmons and put Creative Commons as a tag.
You
and
had
it would
to do it,
up.
Didn't you?
Well, you know, you were asking for it, really.
Yeah, how dare I pretend I know something?
No, I thought when you said tag that this is what you were talking about.
Yeah, I guess I didn't realize they had customizable pages for each tag.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't think that tags are a bad thing, you know, in this way. But there's not sort of in the way you're talking about, like a metadata, you know, where the like you can't go on to Last.fm and in some sort of authoritative way say that Lorenzo's music is Creative Commons. I mean, you could do that on the page just in text, but there's no way to do it as like a metadata field that you could hit with an API. That doesn't exist to my knowledge.
Now,
I would love if it did, and if you can show me that actually exists, I will buy it.
I am going to say that it doesn't do what you're talking about for all tags. Because
it does for most for the big ones.
Right, that's what I'm saying. So it is supported in a sense. Because I just did remember a while back when we were doing a test for the tags on Last.fm using them with Jamendo and Libra FM. And we put in the tag Skittles just to see if it would show up.
Okay, but Skittles is a stupid tag to do.
Right, but I'm
for.
Just saying it's not automatically generated, so it does have to get supported.
Well, yeah, no, it's user made, just like not all artists have, you know, tells about the artist. The user has to go in and say, oh, this is what this artist does. Or the artist can do it, of course, but if they don't care about Last.fm, then they're not going to do it. And some user has to be like, oh, I know about this band. Here's some info about them. And the tags work exactly the same way. So nobody cares about the Skittles tag. I will try to go
nobody
edit
should,
that.
Nobody should care about the Skittles tag.
So they're gonna know about it now. I'm going to reference this show as popularizing the Skittles tag. The Skittles tag, popularized by Music Management Podcast on April 3rd.
Start filling out the Wikipedia article now. about yeah. how we popularized that tag.
Yeah, so if I was Stephen Colbert, I could be like, Colbert Nation.
Yes, you could.
Make sure that I defined what the Skittles tag was.
You heard it here first, everyone.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's cool. Even though I think I blathered on about the sort of heat check thing, that got us some interesting information about Last.fm.
Yes, that's it did. Really,
it's like an improvisation. You know, you never know where it's going to go. You just really got to throw it out there and great things will happen.
We're like verbal dancers.
It's very true.
Sorry.
I'm actually dancing right now.
Oh, so. My God. Okay. So, so on that note, this has been another Music Manumit at musicmanumit.com. Thank you for listening.